Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. The Middle East, always a hot mess, is even more of one the last few weeks. Saudi Arabia and Iran seem more on the verge or in the middle of a proxy war than ever. This is embroiling several neighboring nations, including Lebanon and Yemen and others. For example, earlier this month, Lebanese Prime Minister Saad Hariri suddenly announced his resignation because of growing Iranian influence in the country. He made the announcement from Saudi Arabia, his home being Lebanon, causing many in his political party to believe that Hariri is being held hostage in Saudi Arabia, which ordered its citizens out of Lebanon shortly after Hariri's resignation. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson issued a statement on Friday cautioning against any party within or outside Lebanon using Lebanon as a venue for proxy conflicts or in any manner contributing to the instability of that country, without naming any names, like Iran. Hariri's resignation comes just days after Jared Kushner's unannounced trip to Saudi Arabia, along with several other Trump administration officials, including Deputy National Security Advisor Dina Powell and Middle East Envoy Jason Greenblatt. So what the heck is going on in the Middle East? Joining us now is Anne Barnard, Beirut Bureau Chief for The New York Times, to discuss what these recent events actually mean to the U.S., to the people there, and to the world. Anne, thanks so much for doing this. Thanks for joining us from Beirut today. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian.
So is the just-resigned Prime Minister of Lebanon a hostage in Saudi Arabia?
Well, this is the question that all of Lebanon and all of the region is asking. I mean, as crazy as it seems, and I think freaking out is not too strong a word for the reactions in Lebanon, it increasingly looks like that may be the case. Certainly, Western diplomats and Lebanese officials are unanimous, at least on background. They're a little more circumspect on the record, but they are saying that it seems that at the very least he is remaining there under some kind of pressure or coercion and is on a tight leash, as they say, and they don't discount completely the possibility that he may literally not be free to leave.
So did he resign his post as Prime Minister of Lebanon under some kind of pressure from Saudi Arabia?
Well, I think The first thing we have to address is, did he resign or not? The first time he spoke in a live interview more than a week after he unexpectedly flew to Saudi Arabia and then announced his resignation from there the next day, he said that, in fact, he is a free man, but he knows that really to be constitutionally valid, his resignation has to be done in person, and he assured everyone that he'll be back in a few days to tender his resignation in person. But up to now, it hasn't been accepted by the president or anyone else in Lebanon because they're reserving judgment on whether it was a real resignation or not. So even that basic fact is in dispute.
Is it more Saudi Arabia or more Iran that would want Hariri out?
Well, one thing that has been very confusing to observers is, why would it benefit Saudi Arabia to get Hariri out? The way Lebanon has worked for years has been that there are political factions that are more or less backed by Saudi Arabia and more or less backed by Iran. And there's always a struggle for power between them. Iran has been on the ascendant for years, especially with its main ally in Lebanon, Hezbollah, acquiring a lot more power, weapons, and influence, especially through its role in the Syrian war, where it played a decisive role in keeping President Bashar al-Assad afloat. So why would Saudi Arabia want him out when he's their guy? One reason is that Hariri was presiding over a government, or is presiding over a government, that includes Hezbollah. It's a national unity government that was put in place last year after a long political vacuum. with representatives from across the political spectrum in Lebanon. Now, Saudi Arabia didn't like that because they don't want Hariri to be conciliatory or making compromises with Hezbollah. They want him to be confronting it more directly, whereas Hariri has made the case to them that really the only realistic way to manage the situation is to try to remain engaged and you know, try to keep what stability Lebanon has been able to maintain during 6 years of a war next door in Syria. Saudi Arabia basically is sending a message that they want anyone who's going to be their guy to be more compliant and more on board with their new confrontational, increasingly confrontational approach to Iran in the region.
And listeners, if we have any Saudi Americans listening, any Lebanese Americans listening, any Iranian Americans listening, or anyone else who wants to call in and talk to New York Times correspondent Anne Bernard in Beirut about what's going on over there and the implications for us and the world, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. What's the bigger picture behind what you just said, Saudi Arabia becoming more confrontational with Iran? Why is that?
Well, first of all, Iran has increased its influence and reach across the Middle East for years, since the toppling of Saddam Hussein that created a vacuum in Iraq that Iran was very adept at exploiting, and now continuing with Iran and Hezbollah's key role in propping up the government of the Assad government in Syria. So, for sure, Saudi Arabia has taken the position that it's time to cut Iran and Hezbollah back down to size. Now, on the other hand, Saudi Arabia is also going through a big transition domestically. The Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, is consolidating power. He carried out a big purge, or in his words, a corruption roundup, on the same day that Hariri, the Lebanese prime minister, gave his resignation. So the question is, was that really a corruption roundup, as he said, or was this an attempt to consolidate his power, either for its own sake or to prepare for increasing escalation in the region? So what is the Crown Prince up to? What is he doing throughout the region? He's also presided over a war in Yemen that Saudi Arabia basically started against Houthi rebels who are aligned with Iran in Yemen. So on many fronts, he's escalating against Iran. And the question also has been raised of how much the Trump administration is on board with that, how much is Israel on board with that, because those two parties also have been talking a lot lately about ratcheting up confrontation and attempts to roll back Iran's influence in the region. And with so many potentially impulsive players on the scene, analysts and officials in the region are very nervous that that increases the chance of perhaps an accidental escalation that could lead to unpredictable events, economic collapse in Lebanon, or even war.
At the same time, while the Saudi government is becoming more confrontational with Iran, it's also becoming more confrontational with some Saudi princes. So Mohammed bin Salman, commonly known there as MBS, recently arrested on corruption charges. 11 princes in the royal family and nearly 200 members of the Saudi business elite who are now being holed up, I read, in the Ritz-Carlton in Riyadh. What's the rationale behind those arrests?
Well, that's what I was mentioning. And actually, there's a great piece by my colleagues Ben Hubbard and David Kirkpatrick in today's New York Times looking at MBS and his new confrontational approach, both domestically and internationally. He said that this was an attempt to, part of his plans for economic reform, to cut back on graft, to modernize the economy and diversify it away from the oil industry. But of course, it raised a lot of questions. It raised more questions than it answered, because if he wants to diversify the economy and attract more types of investment in the country, perhaps rounding up very wealthy people who have a lot of international business ties with no due process and no transparency, it's already had an effect on investor confidence in Saudi Arabia. So the question is this young prince in his 30s taking steps that not only could lead to unpredictable ripple effects in the region, but may not even serve the purposes that he's stated?
Where does Jared Kushner's visit come in? It's now revealed that he made an unannounced visit to Saudi Arabia a few days ago.
Well, the belief is that perhaps MBS feels that he has a green light from the Trump administration to take these steps, that he does seem to have developed a pretty close relationship with Jared Kushner, who's his contemporary. And of course, Donald Trump made his first presidential visit overseas to Saudi Arabia and has signaled strong support for the kingdom in many areas, including its confrontational approach toward Iran. So some people are, or most analysts in the region, believe that he's been emboldened by what he perceives as strong support from the Trump administration after having had a much cooler relationship with the Obama administration, where, of course, there was a lot of friction over the Iran nuclear deal that was concluded under President Obama.
212-433-WNYC for New York Times correspondent Ann Bernard in Beirut. 212-433-9692. And Alex in West Orange, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Thank you. I have two questions for the reporter. The first one is, to what extent, is a practical question, to what extent is Hariri's wealth remain tied to the Saudi government? There's no secret that the Hariri family made billions of dollars being tied to the Saudi government. That's the first question. Second question, New York Times reported today that Kushner is putting together a peace plan in the Middle East. Could that be something that has to do, anything to do with this plan? Thank you. I'll take my answer off air.
Thank you very much. Anne?
Thank you, Alex. Those are great points. Yes, first of all, the question about the peace plan could be related. Some are speculating that Israel and Saudi Arabia, of course, they've had a meeting of the minds to some extent on their mutual interest in rolling back Iranian influence. The question is there some larger plan afoot in which they can team up against Iran and somehow achieve what Israel wants, which is more normalization with more Arab countries, perhaps by emphasizing more their common interests in countering Iran and downplaying the underlying issue of the Palestinian question and Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories. So that very much may be part of the bigger picture, and there's a lot of speculation about exactly what form that takes and what discussions are going on behind the scenes, and we're trying to work to understand that more.
What do you know?
I'm sorry, what was the other question from Alex?
About the Israeli-Palestinian peace plan, I guess, that Jared Kushner seems trying to push?
No, and about Hariri's financial ties with Saudi Arabia. Yes, so the history of the Hariri family fortune is that their construction company in Saudi Arabia, which was built up under the current prime minister's father, Rafiq Hariri, also a former prime minister who was assassinated in 2005, that company is second only or is the main competitor of the Bin Laden company as the two largest construction companies in Saudi Arabia. And they made untold amounts of money during Saudi Arabia's construction boom over the past decades. So Saudi Arabia is where Hariri made his fortune. And not only that, since the kingdom has been having financial struggles lately, his company came under financial pressure. In fact, the government has not paid bills to his company. It was forced into bankruptcy, and that was widely seen as being politically motivated, a signal perhaps earlier this year that in hindsight signaled their dissatisfaction with him. They allowed that company to go bankrupt. That in turn weakened Hariri in Lebanon because he depends on those funds to be able to make to pay his widespread patronage network, which has suffered a lot since the company was forced to be shuttered.
And it's also worth noting that President Trump has been trying to convince Saudi Arabia's national oil company, Aramco, to list itself on the New York Stock Exchange. He tweeted on November 4th, would very much appreciate Saudi Arabia doing their IPO of Aramco with the New York Stock Exchange, important to the United States. Does that play a role in any of these machinations?
Well, again, it's all part of Trump's outreach to Saudi Arabia and his general support for the moves of MBS, the Crown Prince. But now the Aramco IPO is in question because of the concerns about the concerns on the part of investors over the arrest of these princes. You have to understand that this corruption committee that is going around arresting princes and major business people in Saudi Arabia has basically unlimited powers. They can arrest anyone, they can investigate anyone, they can confiscate assets. Some people see it as a shakedown. They believe that part of what the prince is doing is trying to corral more assets for the financially struggling government by forcing these people to cough up in exchange for better treatment in detention or better treatment in the outcome of their cases. So this is a completely untransparent set of allegations and arrests that have certainly rattled investors who might have otherwise been excited about the Aramco project.
Untransparent and justified or not, Trump seems to support them. He tweeted last Monday, "I have great confidence in King Salman and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. They know exactly what they are doing. Some of those they are harshly treating have been milking their country for years."
Right. Of course, the prince's critics point out that he too has partaken in the let's say very vague boundaries between the Saudi state and the Saudi royal family. He has a multi-billion-dollar yacht. He has all kinds of assets that no one knows exactly where these princes get their assets from and how they relate to the government. There's all kinds of no-bid contracts, and whenever the government has a project to do, suddenly members of the royal family buy the land that the government needs for those projects and then can resell it at a huge markup. So there's really an extremely blurry line between the treasury and the private fortunes of the family, including the crown prince.
Michael in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with New York Times correspondent Ann Barnard in Beirut. Hi, Michael. Oh, Michael disappeared. Let's try Roya in Great Neck. Hi, Roya, you're on WNYC.
Oh, hello. Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm Iranian, but I'm backing up Saudis and the decision that they make to show that really the government of Lebanon is not capable to control Hezbollah. Don't forget that Hezbollah is getting more powerful, like becoming its own country. Terrorist or whatever you want to call it, but its own country, backing up by Iran and all the missiles that they came, took from Iran, coming from Syria, coming from to Lebanon, and the whole region right now is scared of another caliphate, but Shia caliphate, not the Sunni. So the Sunnis have the right to defend themselves. Kuwaitis, Saudis, Qataris, all of those regions, they have the right to defend themselves and to just, give the, how do you say, give the real, who is in charge right now? Is it Iranian that they are manipulating the Iraq, and Kurdistan and Syria and Lebanon, or the whole world is in charge of controlling them? Not to get the atomic bomb, not to get the missiles to attack Israel. So who is in charge right now? I think the Saudi had the right decision.
Roya, thank you very much. And I think she expresses very well the regional Sunni and Israeli fear of Iran's growing influence in the area, right?
Absolutely. I think, no one disputes that the influence of Iran and the influence of Hezbollah has grown a lot, and that there are concerns about that. The Lebanese state has always been a weak one. Hezbollah is a political party that's part of the government, and it's also a Iran-backed militia that operates essentially independently of the government and the armed forces, and has a veto power over the formation of governments, has in the past taken Lebanon into wars without the consent of the government. And so it's a massive problem for Lebanon. At the same time, the question is whether this is an effective way of going about it, given that this move ultimately has put Hezbollah in a position where it looks like the grown-up. The leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, after Hariri went to Saudi Arabia, made a speech and said, okay, I'm not going to blame Hariri. Maybe he's not acting on his own free will. Really, it's an insult to Lebanon to have the prime minister sort of mysteriously called off to Saudi Arabia. Now, of course, it's comical. Both Hezbollah and Hariri have now stated in the past week or so since this crisis began, respectively, Hezbollah said Iran is not interfering in Lebanon, and Hariri said Saudi Arabia is not interfering in Lebanon. Both of those claims are patently untrue. Both countries interfere to a great extent in Lebanon, and just the question is this move with Hariri really helping counter Hezbollah, or is it leaving Hezbollah looking more reasonable? The whole country is, even those that are really against Hezbollah are appalled by the idea that a country is potentially keeping the prime minister against his will, and even if that's not literally true, has taken such a step as to actually try to remove or pressure towards the removal of the prime minister of another country. So.
Wow. Last thing, just because it's always intriguing when a new American administration tries to launch a Middle East peace plan, meaning an Israeli-Palestinian peace plan, is it clear at all what Jared Kushner, as the envoy for this, has up his sleeve?
Well, I think it's not clear because the details of what he's talking about, both with Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince in Saudi Arabia, and also the leader of United Arab Emirates, two leaders that he's become very close to, it's not entirely clear what he's proposing to them and what he's proposing to Israel. So, the real question that's keeping people anxious in the region is part of that deal an opportunity for Israel to come in and carry out a military operation against Hezbollah with the political cover of Saudi Arabia. That's what people are concerned about. Is that a piece of the puzzle here? Is Israel trying to shift the focus away from the underlying issue of the Palestinians and focus instead on rebuilding relationships in the Arab world based on a common enmity towards Iran, rather than handling the issue of the Palestinians that's been on the table since 1948?
Anne Barnard, New York Times correspondent in Beirut, thank you so much.
Thank you.